is not the normal pitch.
That's somebody shows in the plaza.
It's been taped, though.
Yeah.
Turn on.
Start spreading the news.
We're all good.
Another ball after there.
Good morning and welcome to the July meeting of the New York State Racing and Wagering Board, Schenectady, New York. I'm Chairman John Sabini, joined by board members Daniel Hogan and Charles Diamond. And we will open the meeting, as is our tradition, with public comment period. Members of the public that want to address the board, this is the opportunity to now. Sir, state your name, please, and...
My name is Brent Carter, spelled B-R-E-N-T-C-A-R-T-E-R. And I've come about 2,500 miles to address the board today, came from the Pacific time zone. I've watched some of your, with interest, some of your hearings, or not hearings, but meetings over the last couple of years on the internet. And one drew particular attention to me. A harness trainer was cited for a violation, and the board members, actually it was a repeated violation, and one of the board members, it's hard to tell on the streaming video, described his behavior as shameful. And I have something to address that. It motivated me even more to come to the point here. This might be a little difficult for me to get through, but I'm going to cite a couple examples not to do racing that I consider shameful. One was a man was jailed for rape here in New York, and after 20 years in jail, finally got out when the evidence showed he wasn't guilty. And then I looked up more cases I saw on the news, about 20 of them in the last few years, of people who were innocent and in jail. And so for myself, I see that as a shameful thing. Other things in sports not to do with racing, the Nancy Kerrigan, Tanya Harding case where a guy just took a weapon and smashed Nancy Kerrigan in the leg. She couldn't race. Another one, the Tim Donaghy case, the NBA referee whose job it is to be, had the integrity to keep the game going honestly, wound up serving a jail term for illegal activity. Another one was the Arlington Million case, where somebody was changing the tickets partway through, and it apparently came out of the Catskills, and many racing fans were sort of cheated out of their money in previous events, and this one they were able to come to clarify the situation and identify the perpetrators. Issues that deal with this board, Bradley Obieza, who was a top jockey when I was a kid, first started to go to the races, I see where he's been had difficulties as a clerk of the scales, and I mean, I find that Hall of Fame guy having a problem. And then most recently, John Cansdale, who I sent a letter to rectify an issue I had, I wanted to find out that shortly after that, and I can't verify the truth of it, but the newspaper accounts are that he had two jobs. He wasn't supposed to have two jobs. And the shameful comment sort of comes to mind there when the person in charge of the integrity situation doesn't take care of it. So now let me get to the case that I'm familiar with or affected me the most. I was licensed by the state of New York back in the 70s as a harness racing driver, and I was suspended at Vernon Downs in 1976. And I filed a timely appeal with the board, and the appeal was delayed and delayed and delayed, and the original premise was we can't have the appeal until the investigation is over. So that made sense. It dragged on and on and on. No timely appeal. Yet while I was at Vernon Downs, the state steward, or presiding judge may have been his title, John Cashman, required me to to submit to a public interrogation of the media, asking me questions about where did I come from, how did this happen, how did that happen, and I found it a humiliating situation. I was required, at my own expense, to make two trips to New York City, where your main office was at the time. I was on a lower budget, but the rules are, you have to go where you're told to go. The result of this, and it's tough for me to get these words out to say them, but this is what I believe and this is what I've seen, is that dishonest New York State Racing and Wagering Board employees issued untold numbers of reports that put my name front and center in an interstate race-fixing scandal. And this was like a stampede through other racing regulating agencies. And I haven't been allowed to race in the state of New York since then. I've repeatedly filed written notices, please have my hearing. In 1982, I was informed, okay, we will have your hearing 6 years later, but you have to file a license application first. I filed the application in the middle of the year. The end of the year came. Daniel Goldberg, who was processing it, he said, we just haven't had time to get around to your license application. You'll have to file another one. 1983, I refiled solely for the purpose of having this hearing to clear my name. What happens? The whole year passes. At the end of 1983, he says, we just haven't been able to conclude our investigation. 1984, I file another license application. I talk to different people, and my license application in July of that year is refused. But the whole premise, which I stated on it, was to have the appeal hearing from 1976. Went through the license application process, two trips to New York across the country. The hearing officer, David Vaughn, decided to separate the two issues completely. He said, I'm only going to deal with your license application, which was denied, and I'm not going to deal with your original suspension. So what I'm doing today, and I don't know how you'll proceed with this, I've made a reissuance of my original appeal. I've enclosed a copy of the original suspension and supporting evidence, and I would like you to consider moving forward with this and declaring whether I'm innocent or guilty and have a hearing and not be determined to be guilty by board employees. I'll give a copy to each of you.
Thank you.
Are you Gail Pronti?
Yes.
I'd like to say that Gail Pronti has been very polite and courteous to me in providing documents from the past. She has been quick to answer the phone, quick to return my calls. She does not appear to have the evidence I need, but I have to so note there have been other employees which have been apparently devious to me, but she is not one of them. I know you have a schedule for today for many things you need to handle. I will wait at the end of the meeting if there's a possible plan to have a hearing or not to have a hearing or to discuss this matter.
We consult our licensing and legal staff to talk about this. Obviously, the initial case is 34 years old now.
But I'm still suffering the penalty.
I understand, but, you know.
Yes, and I understand that you understand.
That there's a whole different set of technology, and that's, you know, the we're not used to handling cold cases, as they say,
yes,
in the police world.
And as tough as this may be, for a person to prove they're innocent in a case, I believe that I can present overwhelming evidence that I'm innocent in this race-fixing scandal and that I didn't learn about the nuances and the effects, and that at least I would be satisfied if you could hear the evidence and then you make your decision after hearing the evidence. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate the trip and the effort you made coming here, and we'll talk to staff about it. Thank you. I'll now ask Secretary Gail Pronti, unless you... Are you? I thought Mr. Crane was going to address the board in a second. I'll ask Secretary Gilpin to call the agenda.
Call the meeting to order at 11:13. Approve the minutes of the board meeting held on June 23rd, 2010.
Is there a motion? Motion to approve the minutes, all those in favor?
Aye.
Next item.
Items previously approved or deferred by the chair since the last meeting were 66. Questions? Items previously approved, denied, or deferred by the board since the last meeting were 4. And items to be approved, denied, or deferred by the board today. First item is the Monticello Raceway 2010 license application.
Mr. Lynch.
Monticello Raceway requests 210 dates of racing in 2010. We began live racing on January 4th. From March through October, the first post time will be 12:50, while in November and December, the first post time will revert to 12:25 p.m. There will be one nighttime program, and that was held on July 3rd with a first post time of 7:30 p.m. The afternoon racing is scheduled for a Monday through Thursday basis. However, there is racing on Friday, June 4th, Saturday evening, July 3rd, and on Sunday.
The 18th and the 25th.
July 18th and 25th. There will be no racing on Monday, September 6th. At this time, approval for the August and September 2000 dates are recommended.
Questions or comments on the Monticello application for 2 months? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item is approved. Next item.
Next item is the New York Jockey Injury Compensation Fund certification of election of jockey. Directed to fund board.
Mr. Firestein.
Thank you. As the board is aware, the Jockey Injury Compensation Fund is a not-for-profit corporation which secures workers' compensation coverage on a blanket basis for jockeys, apprentice jockeys, and exercise riders licensed under the racing law who are deemed under the statute to be employees of the Jockey Injury Compensation Fund. Among the members of the fund board of directors is one representative of the jockeys. The statute, section 221 of the racing law, provides that the jockeys' representative is elected every 2 years, and also provides that the board shall certify the results of that election. This year, during 2010, earlier in the year, the Jockey Injury Compensation Fund, through their election administrator, conducted an election for that position. The fund reported the results, or rather the election administrator reported the results to the board and certified those results. Those results showed that former jockey Larry Sommel was elected and will continue to serve, as he has in recent past, as that representative. The items before the board were the recommendation that the board certify the election results presented.
Questions or comments on this item? Hearing none, we'll now move the certification of the election of Larry Sommel as a member of the jockey director for the Jockey Injury Compensation Fund Board. All those in favor?
Aye.
Next item.
Item 3 is notice of proposed rulemaking, cell phones in the paddock area.
Mr. Firestein.
Thank you. This is a matter which was deferred last month. This is an item involving a proposed rulemaking, which if approved by the board, would then go to the governor's office for regulatory reform. This rulemaking would repeal the existing rule concerning the recording of telephone calls in the paddock and replace that rule with a new rule permitting the restrictive use of cell phones and other electronic communication devices in the paddock or receiving barn of a harness racetrack in an area to be designated under the authority of the board's judges.
Questions or
The comments that were received are attached.
In reviewing this item and the discussion we had last year, I went back and looked at the comments, and the comments that were in favor were simply, were in favor. The comments that were opposed went into some detail with reasoning and some rationale as to their opposition. So, I think it's an important issue that we talk about. Still not sure that I'm there yet in terms of moving this along. I'll open it to the other board members for discussion as well.
I feel sort of the same way, and I think that there, you know, is there other alternatives that we could look into here? By having a landline in the patent judge's office or something like that, it seems to me that
can they do that now? Use the landline in the judge's office?
My understanding is that in emergency cases, the trainers and other personnel are able to use that landline to make a call. If the question is whether there could be a dedicated landline, i.e. one perhaps paid by the Horsemen's Association for that purpose, I think that could be arranged.
The other question, I think I know the answer to, is obviously if they leave the paddock area, the designated paddock area, they can use any device they want.
If they go outside,
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. However, in fairness, once in the paddock, employees associated with a horse are generally required to remain for the races, and when trainers have multiple horses and multiple races, they sometimes have prolonged periods where they are not able to leave the paddock.
There remain questions to be answered, though, correct?
Yes, I think so.
Well,
monitoring?
There's no USDA rule, there's no RCI model rule. Yeah, I'd like to see it deferred again. I mean, I've had some discussions with people. It's not high on my regulatory agenda, so I'd like to make a motion to defer it again.
Move to defer. All those in favor of deferring this item?
Aye.
Rulemaking on cell phones in the paddock area at Standard Bred Dress is deferred. Next item.
Item 4 is notice of proposed rulemaking consensus minimum age for thoroughbred vets.
Mr. Firestein.
Thank you. This is a proposed rulemaking, hopefully to be accomplished by consensus rulemaking. This item, if proposed by the board and eventually adopted, would correct a reference in what is now an obsolete rule because of that reference, which refers to the minimum age for wagering in thoroughbred racing as 21 instead of 18. There are, as Mr. Stewart's memo to the board indicates, various other places, including another reference in the thoroughbred rules, to the age of 18. So this is an inconsistency which came to my attention, I believe, earlier this year or late last year as a result of a question that was raised by one of the off-track betting corporations. And in my mind, this is basically a ministerial correction, and the recommendation to the board is to propose this as a consensus rulemaking and ultimately adopt it to conform to the other rules.
Questions or comments on the proposed rulemaking on minimum age for thoroughbred vets?
All the notifications at Saratoga now indicate you must be 18, and that the signs are pretty old.
There are other places in the rules, and I believe also in the statute, that refer to the age of 18 as the minimum age. This is an antiquated and obsolete reference that should be corrected in the rules.
No further questions or comments. We'll take up the rulemaking on minimum age for thoroughbred vets. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next item.
Item 5 is Saratoga Harness request to amend player rewards program.
Mr. Cascarola, back from his trips to New York City.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is actually a request from Saratoga to amend or to, if you will, totally revamp the current type of reward program they have in place at Saratoga Harness. Previously, they had approved a type of a redemption catalog or a reward program where people were able to accumulate points and be able to win or obtain various items. I think Member Hogan calls it tchotchke in some cases. out of the book that's been approved. This is moving to a cash reward program that's very similar to the ones that are in place at NYRA, Catskill OTB, or Capital OTB, and I think Nassau now as well, or Suffolk, excuse me. The rules are substantially exactly the same. They mirror the outline and the rules of those approved programs. This one's slightly different, where the rewards will be made weekly rather than monthly, as in some of the other programs. The controls set up are virtually the same, and they were looking to hopefully get this program approved, so when they're ready to start with their newly approved internet and account wagering program, maybe as early as tomorrow, they'll be able to roll everything out together. Staff has reviewed this and found it to be in compliance with the rules and is recommending approval.
So all the testing stuff done on the internet platform now too, Tom?
That has been done as well, yes.
Great. Everything worked out good with that, well with that?
Yeah, we went through the testing last week. We received the testing of the internet program, and I went through that. There was a little bit of back and forth on it, just on the way certain items were being reported to us, but we found that to be acceptable as well. So that system is ready to go.
Other questions or comments? Hearing none, the board will take up the Saratoga Harness to request to amend their Player Extra Rewards program. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item is approved. Next item.
Item 6 is Western Regional OTB a request to conduct in-home sign-up testing with Time Warner Rochester.
Councilor Regola.
Thank you. This request is made pursuant to Section 10031 of the Racing Law. It permits the board to approve in-home simulcast conducted by off-track betting corporations, provided there's a contract in place for the written agreement for distribution of revenues. This agreement is virtually identical to the one that was before the board last year for Western OTB with Time Warner. The contract, again, is identical, virtually the same except for the dates. It's the simulcast is restricted to only those counties within region of Western OTB. It calls for the simulcast of 69 live races from Batavia Downs. That'll begin on July 26th and carry through their meet till December 5th. Staff reviewed the request, finding meets the requirements of 10.03 and recommends approval.
Questions or comments on the Western Regional OTB Batavia Downs simulcast request for Time Warner Rochester? I have one. You said this is a renewal or a similar to one that was executed last year. At any point, was there discussion about joint operations with any other OTB?
Not that I'm aware of for this, no.
Just want to get that on the record. We'd like to see that. I will then call the question. All those in favor of the Western Regional OTB Batavia Downs simulcast request at Time Warner Rochester? Aye.
Aye.
Item is approved. Now it's time for the adjudicatory portion of our agenda, which is lengthy today. And with that, next item.
First item in that is in the matter of Jorge Ramos.
Mr. Firestein.
Thank you. This matter results from an order to show cause served upon Thoroughbred Racing Groom Jorge Ramos, requiring him to demonstrate why his license should not be suspended or revoked. Because his experience, character, and general fitness are such that his participation in racing would be inconsistent with the public interest, convenience, or necessity, or with the best interests of racing generally, and that he made a false statement on his license application concerning his criminal history. this hearing, this matter is a drop unusual in that it involves the order to show cause about the suspension or revocation of the groom's license, but it's also consolidated with an appeal from a refusal to license the individual as an owner based on the same grounds. There was a hearing held before Mr. Parente as the designated hearing officer. Mr. Parente recommends that the board affirm the license refusal and revoke the groom's license in this matter.
Questions or comments on the Ramos case? Hearing none, all those in favor of the hearing officer's decision on Jorge Ramos?
Aye.
Next item.
Number 8 is in the matter of Roger Feldman.
Mr. Firestein.
This is a matter which involves an order to show cause served upon Mr. Horgan, who is a licensed thoroughbred racing trainer. It required him to demonstrate why his license should not be suspended or revoked based on financial irresponsibility. The matters relate to a Department of Labor judgment and to a federal tax judgment in the state of Florida. There was a hearing held before Mr. Parente. The licensee failed to appear. Mr. Parente submitted the report, which you have together, of course, with the record of the proceeding. The hearing officer recommends that the license here be revoked based upon the finding that Mr. Horgan is financially irresponsible and has violated the cited board rules.
This will be the first official adjudicatory suspension, besides the fact that we owe taxes in the state of Florida, I believe, but the first one that we did in conjunction with the state labor department in forcing trainers to comply with state labor laws.
That's correct, yes. Right.
This results as an effort by the state labor department dating back to 2008 that was designed to bring the businesses of racing into compliance with state labor laws. Many of the initial findings were that lots of people didn't comply with warnings and seminars and getting people into compliance. I believe we have substantial compliance in New York now, and it's a good thing, but this is the first where we had to cite someone who did not, and I'm delighted that under former Labor Commissioner Smith that the board was able to jointly participate in this effort rather than fighting the effort, and rather than dragging its feet, the board was progressive and proactive in this matter. So I'm delighted, not delighted we're suspending someone, but delighted that we have a high level of compliance, that this is one of the few that's come before us. So with that, I'll call the question on upholding the hearing officer's decision on Roger Horgan. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Next item.
Item 9 is in the matter of Christopher Heaney.
Mr. Firestein.
This matter results from an appeal rather than an order to show cause. This appeal is from the March 2010 refusal at staff level to deny the groom's license application of Mr. Heaney based upon a finding that his experience, character, and fitness are such that his participation in racing would be inconsistent with the public interest, convenience, or necessity, or with the best interests of racing generally, and that he made a false statement concerning his criminal history. A hearing was scheduled and held before Mr. Parente as the designated hearing officer. The licensee did not appear at the hearing. The recommendation before you contained in the hearing officer report from Mr. Parente is that Mr. Horton's appeal be denied, thereby the license refusal would be upheld.
As I've said before, no show, you gotta go. Also, don't lie on your application. Questions or comments on the Heaney case? Hearing none, all those in favor of holding the hearing officer?
Aye.
Aye. Next item.
Number 10 is in the matter of John Carlos Hidalgo.
Mr. Firestein.
Thank you. This is a matter which involves an order to show cause served upon Mr. Hidalgo a thoroughbred racing groom, which require him to demonstrate why his license should not be suspended or revoked in relation to charges that he possessed hypodermic equipment, marijuana, and an electrical device, sometimes known as a battery, that could affect the speed or condition of a horse in violation of the board rules that are cited. This matter started with a dormitory search conducted by Finger Lakes Racetrack Security on or about May 14th of 2010. It comes to the board as a result of a referral from the state steward at Finger Lakes. The state steward's authority to suspend and thoroughbred racing is limited to 60 days. The steward at Finger Lakes imposed the maximum and referred it to the board for further consideration. A hearing was conducted as a result of the order to show cause. Mr. Parenti was again the designated hearing officer. You have before you the report in which he recommends no finding of fact with regard to the marijuana charge, but recommends a finding that Mr. Hidalgo's license be revoked based upon his possession of a hypodermic needle in violation of the board rule cited and the possession of the electrical device which could be used to affect the speed or conditioning of a horse, again in violation of the specific rule that's cited.
Energizer belongs on bunnies, not horses. Comments on Mr. Hidalgo?
I have a comment. I carefully read and examined the case, and I have to say that after 5 short months of being on the board, I have to say this is one of the most blatant and heinous violations that I've read and experienced in those 5 months. So I'm not very happy with it.
Never found the electrical device after it was originally secured?
The individuals who participated in this failed to secure the device properly. As a result, it appears that it walked off. And to my knowledge, although I have not made a specific inquiry, it was not subsequently recovered.
So when they have the pictures of the room, did they have the pictures with the electrical, it was a battery, right?
I believe that apart from the statements and testimony, I believe that Mr. Hidalgo admitted that it was in the room. His statement was that he had just moved into the room and he had nothing to do with anything that was in the room.
Other questions or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor of sustaining the ruling of the hearing officer on Mr. Hidalgo, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Next item.
Item 11 is in the matter of Carl S. Wiley.
Mr. Firestein.
Thank you. This is the final adjudicatory matter, and I believe the final matter on the board's agenda today. As seems to be the norm today, there was an order to show cause. In this case, it was served upon Mr. Wiley, a thoroughbred racing groom, requiring him to demonstrate why his license should not be suspended or revoked in relation to crimes charged and the subsequent conviction for those. There was a hearing held before Mr. Parenti. The licensee failed to appear, and the designated hearing officer has submitted a report, which the board has before it with the record, of course, in which the hearing officer recommends that Mr. Wiley's license be revoked because of the criminal acts and lack of requisite experience, character, and fitness to participate in prior mutual horse racing.
And he didn't show. Not to be confused with Carlton Willie, the former Met pitcher of the 1960s. All those in favor of the hearing officer?
Can I just ask one quick question? Wiley, was there was there proper service done to this, for this guy on this?
Exhibit 1 purports to be the affidavit of mailing and proof of service. If Secretary Parenti will entrust me with this, and I know she carefully watches me.
It says mail returned that address on the I didn't see that before.
Okay.
The order of show cause indicates it was sent to a specific address and...
9431?
Yes, the affidavit of mailing indicates that it was sent to that specific address. The remaining question is to compare that address with the address contained in the license.
Which is 9431 60th Avenue, Elmhurst, New York.
Which is the one that is listed.
Apartment 4G.
That's good enough for me. That's what's on the license?
It's on the license?
Yeah, that's what's on the license report here, so that's fine. I'm good with that. I don't know why that was.
The individual may no longer have been at that address. Or it's also possible, although less likely, that the address was listed incorrectly on license application.
Bob, that letter we had sent him, a surrender letter, and he had signed for that previously to that 943160
at that. I'll also note for the record that the e-felony he has pled guilty to is pretty heinous. And anyway, I'll leave it at that. Any other questions or comments on the Willie case? Or Wiley case, I'm sorry. All those in favor of sustaining the hearing officer's decision on Mr. Wiley? Aye.
Aye.
Item is approved.
I will Mr. Bill information and discussion 5. Questions? We'll adjourn the meeting down at 11:00.
Thank you for your participation. Have a good Saratoga season.
Come on.
Next year, the licensing, is that about even?
It usually is. I can look at
the figure.
Time
baby
to it.
Oh, yeah. So you did 17,000 last year. So you did 17,000, that's wholesale.
So you got the...